I'm Ray R. Herring. I live 3228 Capahosa Road in Gloucester, Virginia. I was in the Navy as a third-class musician playing trombone and baritone.
Calvin Morrow, 1207 Stevens Street, Greensboro, North Carolina. I was in the Navy band as a second-class musician playing French horn.
Richard Jones, 2407 Elmhurst Drive, Fayetteville, North Carolina. Musician, second class, trombone.
Simeon Holloway, Navy band, musician, second class. I play a little drum. Baritone sax, clarinet, and skip man.
Cymbals.
Thank you. Yeah.
Me, I'm the cymbal man. Sure.
I'm John Gilmer. I live at 3513 California Court, Columbus, Georgia. Musician, second class, a clarinet player.
Abe Thurman, 804 Mulberry Street, Beaufort, North Carolina. Musician, second class. I play flute, piccolo, and trumpet. And if anybody got in trouble, I also played their instrument. Like Woods got in trouble, I played his tuba. And anytime they need somebody in the cymbals, I got my hands beat up many a day playing cymbal. Well, I stayed a whole year without an instrument, so they moved me from clarinet to. I also played in the French horn section, too. I was a utility man.
Mr. Lawrence?
Okay, Julie Pipcorn Lawrence, 4421 Fleming Street, Aiden, NC, second class musician, trumpet player.
Thanks. We were talking, this is tape two, we were talking about some about Hawaii.
I like to mention it, it came up. But as you go through this, you'll find out that I'm only a third class musician.
Why was it?
And that is because
the
ratings came after I had mustered out. Now, the reason I mustered out early because those who were married got the lead before the others.
And
the ratings came after I mustered out. So I did not get the second class rating. I'm the only third class musician left in the whole band.
Okay, that's right. You're right.
Back on points.
I have the score that was those that were upgraded in rating, but as you said, you mustered out. And most of us mustered out, so we did not receive an upgrade in our ratings. Those of us that had second class had really gone up to first class, but when you mustered out, you nullified that. I have that story where I'll find it as soon as I get my eyes straightened out. my granddaughter found me some magnetic glasses last night, so I'm going to try them out. See, can I find that? So that's why I always like the doctor. But this is the thing that. So great about this. Oh, I'm talking to somebody
else. Yeah. You want to ask something about Hawaii? You say you want to talk about Hawaii some more.
Yeah. You got some other comments.
Do this in Hawaii. That's good. Other than entertaining the Manana Barracks, we play before movies. We may have a concert, a dance band play, whatnot. We often had to leave the base and go and play for hospital ships, and they play for dances, USO dances, officers dances, entertain on ships. We had what we call a show band that we did a lot of skits and show tunes and everything. So really the band broke down into three groups. We had two dance orchestras, and then we had what called a show band that went along with this little skit and everything that could entertain.
So what were the skits like? Who all were doing the skits?
Simeon Holloway. He was the mastermind of the skit.
Oh. And Otto Harris, Buck Gaffney.
There's a picture in there, I believe.
Scott.
There's some of these names you're talking about, I've not had a chance to meet or talk about, such as Otto Harris. I've heard lots about Otto. Could y'all talk about him just for a minute?
Otto Harris. I was in high school, I told him. He was a year ahead. And when I did play in the band, I told probably the most comical person you want to meet. He's a tuba player, and later on, he learned to play trumpet, and he was the leader of the Moon Glow Dance Band. That's what I want to say about Otto. I maybe Butch want to add something to that. But Otto also gave nickname to most of the members in the band, and they stuck.
So is that how Mr. Lawrence became Pitbull?
No. He got his another way. But
Hardo was Eagleberry.
He gave me mine. My name was Heavy.
Yeah. Heavy.
Yeah.
And who was Giggleberry?
Otto.
Okay.
And then we had Lunk. That was Scott. And so forth.
Gus, I don't know where that comes from.
Yeah, you
gave me that. You
talking about Gus?
So that's Otto Harris.
Let me say something else about Otto.
Did you give him a picture of it?
Otto was a versatile musician. He's a fellow that played bass fiddle, learned to play the bass fiddle. He was a natural comedian. When I say that, he could entertain. See, this is one other thing about this band. We had guys that really could have gone on out and made a living entertaining. And another thing, he was very compatible. He was just a nice guy. Nice guy. And one other thing, his mother could really cook because she'd send him food that was really delicious, especially cake.
When I first met him, he had some salty language that you had to learn from. I was just a natural for him.
Yeah.
So when he got in the Navy, he was in the right place.
But I think he's the most liked person in the whole band. Everybody liked Otto. And I think it's just the whole band. And like I say, he was most comical, and he gave you a name or any kind. Some of them you didn't want, but they stuck, and you didn't get angry because he gave them to you. See?
We finally gave him a name, too.
Yeah.
Giggleberry.
Yeah.
he's a natural. He named me Butch.
Okay.
Pipcorn. What's his name? Trussell and all those other names. He named everybody. I didn't know. That's
Cecil.
Who?
Cecil.
Cecil. Who is that?
Who is Cecil?
He ain't terrible.
Cecil.
Yeah.
He's really a character. Yeah. That's all. He's a character.
He's a man that taught you how to shoot crap in the Navy. You had to shave and shoot crap in the Navy.
He taught you that?
Yeah.
I thought it was Abe.
Abe was the one who did that.
Abe and Jordan.
Yeah. Abe was from the north.
He's from the north?
Abe was from the north.
He's a northern boy.
And we used to say Abe really was one of the mafia boys. He came down there and taught us all the bad things.
No.
He didn't teach me
all
bad
the bad things.
You want to learn it?
He took me on my first trip to the big city. From then on, my eyes were open.
Was that during the war?
Yes.
So what are you calling the big city then?
New York.
Yeah, so where was that? Where were you? From Chapel Hill?
From Chapel Hill, uh-huh. Our first leave.
Okay.
We
had 10 days leave, and I took
three of us.
Heavy and Butch. And Ray Warren.
Boy,
they went with me. My home was in Newark, New Jersey. And they said they wanted to go to New York, so I showed them how to get to New York and so forth and things like that. So I couldn't be with them every day.
He showed us a lot of things.
So I showed you how to get there and get back.
Yeah.
Any comments about the role of bands and music in the Navy? Any of you could talk a little bit about that? I found this kind of interesting looking back historically how important musicians were in the origin of military operations, and I'm not quite sure yet how things evolved, but you know, for the signals that drummers gave for positioning and things like that. I'm just curious about what you felt in general about the role of musicians and how you served as musicians in World War II.
Well,
Well, we got an opportunity to play for almost anything that you can mention. I say from weddings to funerals.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Kate Smith.
Your name is
on
play.
Kate Smith Show.
Swimming parties.
Kevin O'Donnell.
Bugle Calls.
Sports. All kind of sports.
You played at sports games?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Sure.
So is that both in Chapel Hill as well as Hawaii?
Yeah, that's right, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. We played in
because we played for well, they had a baseball game between the Navy and the Air Force. Joe DiMaggio was on the Air Force team, and the Navy had all good athletes and so forth. And that player that came to North Carolina, what's his name? He was on a plane on the football team. Justice, Charlie Justice. He was just out of high school. He played on the football, the Navy football team. So we saw a lot of good
Don
athletes.
Basically,
Army team played the Don
we
Blatt.
Were for morale.
Yeah.
We were the morale builders, and very important. And everybody knew that music was a good morale builder. And we served and all played and all these different things. For the morale, to keep the morale of the fighting men.
And remember, we were the pre-flight school band. Whatever the activities they were having, we were involved in.
Now,
so in Keenan Stadium, we sat on the 50-yard line at their football games.
Yeah.
So at a football game like that, would the audience be racially mixed? Would
no.
you?
No.
They were. I guess they were still the status quo.
Yeah, still status quo.
Except for us, when we were the cadets were all around us, and we were on the 50-yard line.
Could you tell a difference in a program where you went to play for the Merrick? Is that the ship that was honoring a black businessman
yes,
there? And would that be a larger? Would there have been a bigger turnout of blacks in your audience?
Yes,
there
was a big turnout.
And that was in Wilmington. Can y'all talk about that? Any of you remember?
I remember. Yes. SS Merrick built at Wilmington shipyard there. And we went to play for the christening of that. And that was a big turnout of blacks there. The most influential blacks in the state were there, all over the country. See? Because this was a big thing. This was the first time the ship had been named after a black person. And I can remember that distinctly.
How about your other events for dances and things? These would generally be, your band would be playing for white officers or white cadets.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And even after we got to Hawaii, we played a lot for the dance band played a lot for white officers.
Yes.
How about, you mentioned, well, in Chapel Hill, of course, there wouldn't have been other blacks who were associated with the pre-flight, but once you got to Hawaii, there were other blacks in the service. Can you talk, maybe some of you, about how that system of segregation was working? And I guess I'm curious here also about the performances. Were there chances for blacks in Hawaii to hear your music, or was
well,
it...
They were there. Yeah. We were at the base where all the blacks were. We were at this
I guess in a formal way is what, not just practicing. Were there occasions where blacks were allowed?
We played. Yeah. We were the band for the blacks.
Okay.
Yeah,
that was it. Now, we played these other things. But basically, Manana Bank was for black Navy men. And we were the Manana Bank band, period. And we played for inspections for them, past review, shows and everything else for Manana Barrett.
Now, one other thing I want to tell you about this band that what you're speaking about, Elliot. This band really, someone did some smart recruiting when he went to NC in Durham and A&T. They chose fellas that we just didn't say, I want to join a band. They said, well, you play this, come on, go. No, you were tested. You had to play the music by sight. You had to know your instrument. Plus, there's a standard intelligence test that you had to pass. Every man in this group had a certain IQ. You just didn't grab anybody off the street and could play. Here's a misconception. Black musicians at this time, we played danceable music. Music for the clientele that we played for. Our music really was not accepted by the white clientele. See, Glenn Miller came in and broke that down and said, well, it's separate music. Glenn Miller music and then the Duke Ellington music were Count Basie. So this band was a versatile band. We played for anything. The man could bring and put music on the stand and parse them and say, okay, look it over, let's go. And every man that band could read that music by sight. Then we'd go back and smooth it out. Same thing in the orchestras, the band, the swing band. The guys could play by sight, orchestrations. Or we had fellows in that could arrange music. In fact, Wester Band played some of your arrangements for years, hearing that you had said.
Well, see, now I owe a lot of my music training to one person in that band, and he's listed as the assistant band director and the director of the dance band, and that's Melvin Wall. Mm-hmm. To me, Melvin Wall was the most rounded musician in the band. I won't say he's the best, but he's the most rounded. He did the arrangements, and he taught me how to arrange. First, he needs someone to copy his arrangements. And I caught on to that, so he made me the copies. Then he taught me how to arrange. But Melvin Wall, to me, was the most rounded member in the whole band.
Other comments about Mr. Wall? I've heard another gentleman I never had a chance to.
Same thing as he said, I did a little singing in the band from time to time. He arranged Deep River for me. And I talk about well rounded, he's quite a guy. And his son is happened to be here right now. This is his son. So we are very proud to have him here. But Mel Wall is quite a guy.
Yeah, Mel Wall is quite a guy. The bass, he was a clarinet, saxophone man.
He did everything.
And everything else. But basically, he led the dance band, the number one dance band, and did the arrangement. He did arrangement dance bands, and that pretty much kept him busy.
You know, he went on the road with, what was that, Fletcher Henderson while he was in the band, too, playing baritone saxophone.
Who stayed 2 weeks, bro. Navy let him off for 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's interesting, though, you put down.
That was a favor because Fletcher Henderson played at our concert, see.
Yeah. So, let Melvin go.
And so, Fletcher Henderson's saxophone player was called into service and he needed somebody. And so, he asked the band director, could he do it? So he went to the commanding officer and told him all the details and so forth. So, he arranged it so that he could go off for 2 weeks. I mean, he got a Navy pay plus he got paid from Fletcher Henderson. And that didn't count toward the time off either.
Now the difference between we're speaking about these bands, Ray Anthony was over at Hawaii at the same time we were there. He had an excellent band. And there are other bands, there are other black bands, the Hellcats out of Barber's Point. Those were professional guys from dance bands, Earl Hines and
Jimmy Lonsford,
and those guys, you see. But the thing we're trying to drive home about this group, we were 44 strong, but within that 44, we could produce and give you anything you ask for. Concert music, we had guys, I think Holloway just said he'd sing too. He could sing what do you call some song? Concert song, I can't remember. But all these concert guys. We could play semi-classic music. Then we could jazz it up with a big band and then make a show within the big band, not counting the swing band that we would go out and play. We could switch into commercial music. We used to call it rinky-dink music, you said. That Glenn Miller played and all that stuff. It was acceptable.
So Rinky Dink as opposed to what? What would you consider?
To swing, jazz, make you want to jump.
Yeah.
Well, it's a rhythm, see.
Small combos, they could break down.
Yeah, small combos
also.
Louis Joy and stuff, that's small combos. Or, Spike Jonze, the guys were entertainers. How you look at us now, you say, those guys entertain the young folks. Say, you all entertain, you on the cane, you can't see. But you have to be back with the times, you see.
Yeah,
you get with the times.
See, well, it was Paul Robeson, wasn't he?
Butch wanted to sing like Paul Robeson.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. Going in, and maybe as the war progressed, we've talked a little, addressed the Tuskegee fellows a little bit. Mr. Lawrence mentioned, which is still, the riot was a real big stateside event. I'm curious about what, two things, how you felt about this experience you were undergoing, that is, the high, under the lens kind of life you were going to live, and as the war progressed, how were you able to keep up with stories about the Tuskegee Airmen and other attempts to integrate the military services in? Did you read the Chicago Defender, I guess, is one thing.
Yeah, Pittsburgh Courier, Chicago Defender, Kansas City, this, and Amsterdam News.
Carolina Times. Like that.
They had one out of Virginia, too,
And in North Virginia Guide.
Yeah. And then they had one out of Baltimore, Afro, called Afro America.
Yeah. And I had a football mate kill Bruce. Sam Bruce. Some of y'all should remember Sammy Bruce. His wife passed recently. His daughter lives near Charlotte. He joined along. He was with Carlson. They all went down. And right now, I'm in contact with guys that are veterans of that 99 Pursuits. A couple of guys live in Raleigh. And a dear friend of ours, she used to play the Sweethearts. She nursed one until he passed. Her name is Myrtle Williams. He's living up in Philly. So, yes, we knew about them because they were in the news. That was big news.
Well, how did you feel? How were you apprised then, I guess, of how things were going for other African Americans in the services? Because I know the Tuskegee fellows had some problems, and they would make. There's a book on Tuskegee. One reason I'm curious about this is that the gentleman who wrote the book on Tuskegee didn't read any of the Defenders or the Courier, didn't read any black audience newspapers, and he makes a statement in there that generally speaking, black communities all over the country were not all that concerned about what was happening with the Tuskegee Airmen. And I tend to believe that might not be true, that the news was traveling in ways that's not being reported in white mainstream press. So I'm curious about, how did you hear about other black outfits? Did you hear about what was going on with Tuskegee and other than the news? Is there a kind of are you hearing from other folks? How is the word getting around about conditions for people in other branches of the service?
During that time, you mean?
Yeah, uh-huh.
Well, like you said, from the black news media, and also, when the Navy started to integrate, the first black officers, they came over there with us. Because black, our band, they didn't have nowhere else to put them.
That's right.
They weren't going to let this black man be out there telling the white boys what to do. So they sent all of them over there to Manana Barracks. And that was the beginning. So later on, they Truman signed the thing, and then, but at first, Manana Barracks was the place for all black Navy ground force. And if you're on a ship, the bottom mess hall was the place for you. And, we knew about these things.
Oh, yes.
We were very much talking about it.
I had the opportunity to know that other black units had hard times, same as we did, because I was lucky enough to go into the Army after I left the Navy. And I run into some of the same outfits. We had hard times, too, getting started on things that we wanted to do that they said we couldn't do, the whites said we couldn't do. But we did them and proved them that we were the best. Best dress, best jumpers, best marchers, and best soldiers all the way around. And we had a hard time after that.
One thing was the best thing, and I gave you confidence, that was said about us was when we marched in the end of the war parade. That was an all-day march in Hawaii. We marched all the way around that island. It was all day. Every serviceman, every band on the island was in this parade. And I gave you a copy of that, that it was said that the Manana Barracks Band was the best group in the whole parade.
Do you know something? The question is, how did we know about other black units or other black personnel in the service at that time? Well, as I said, there were black newspapers, and you just named a few. Plus, we wrote back to our family and friends, and they would tell us different things about the news. Then there were things in the movies. We had access to the movies, that we could see what was what. But here's the thing. We were not given the credit for publicity. This band here, we don't have any sound all B1 band, other than that little thing that I got from the fellow that ran the projection there at the base in Hawaii, Ride Out. He took a transcription that we made at a broadcast and made another one because Hard Tongue, whatever we did, and he was there, he had to record. He would have the sounds, you see, not us. We're over there. It's just like playing jobs on a dance. You play a dance, you don't stand around and say, let me hear this. You just play the job, give me my money, I'm gone, you see. You don't think about the history part. So we knew what was going on. And then I had a father that was in World War I. Every day I used to get up when I was a kid, his picture of his battalion is on my wall. I have it right now. That was an inspiration to me. Plus, when I got to ANT, I told you that the situation I was in was new to me. I'd never experienced that. And that's what glorified me and strive even today to go forward and let the world know what we do, because if you don't, no one will ever know. They will only know the worst thing. And we live in a country, and every time I say anything, this is my country too. Even down south, I love it. I left home, didn't have to. But I love down south because I understand it. You see, people, when they understand you, they begin to accept you and love you. And that is why this is important, that we get something out so the world, that we will leave something behind, that our people coming after us will look and say, they did something. That was nice. I wonder this or that, you see. That's why I applaud Alex for going and helping us. We are history, as the lady said, and we want it to be known. So anything we can think of, whether it's good or bad, say it. See, the world wants to know that. We're good folks, too. We've contributed.
Eric, you have any more? I like the question you asking now. You have any more questions you want to find out, anything?
Well, we're just about at a good place. I'm still a little, I guess, it's difficult, I think, to remember what it would have been like in 1942 on the day of Pearl Harbor.
Okay.
But I would be curious if any of you have any comments about how you felt as this war effort was getting underway and how you felt yourselves fitting into it.
I think we all felt this way. In Chapel Hill, we were on cloud nine. We did our duty over there for pre-flight school, and every evening after rehearsal, it was our evening. And we didn't have to be back there until muster the next morning. Go anywhere you wanted to go. And the married men, they lived off the base. And a lot of them lived in Durham, 12 miles away. And it's just like being at home, going to work. So it was nice. I was from Greensboro, and I was about 54 miles from home. I go anytime. Mm-hmm. And the other fellas were near home. So this is what we had at Chapel Hill. Like I say, it was a bed of roses. Everything nice. And here comes the news that we're going to be sent overseas to Pearl Harbor that we'd only heard of when they bombed it. And we were going to be shipped over there. And everybody that was dropped. And they stayed down. After we got over there, they were still down. the morale of the band was really at the low ebb. And for months and months and months, we lived on nothing but skulls. But this is tales that people tell you that I got it, and I saw it on the commanding officer's desk, that you're going to be shipped back to the States, and you're in the wrong place. And I saw it on such and such desk, and it's going to come through next week. We lived on that. We thrived on that. We believed in that, and it kept us going. So after a while, about a year, we stopped thriving on that and went on and made out the best we could.
One of the things that excited me about the band was the fact that I got interested in music. Before I got in the band, I was majoring in agriculture and playing clarinet in the band at A&T. And then I thought once I got in, I would learn a lot. I did pick up another instrument, same thing I play now. And as Heron was saying a while ago about the guys who were married, they're getting out in the afternoons. While they were getting out in the afternoons, I was sitting around trying to learn how to play the trombone. Because I was just interested in music. And then I'd also made some plans, I thought, with Willie Judkins, who was my bunkmate. He played the saxophone, so we had these great ideas. We're going to go back. He was going to go back, come back and go to Central for a year. Well, they called it North Carolina College then. I was going to NT for a year. Then we were going to Boston University. And then I discovered later that Judkins was just full of bull. He was just talking. But we did. I did continue with my music. And that was the most important thing that happened to me while I was in there.
Can I ask a question about looking back on it? What are your memories of a typical day? What are the things that stand out in your mind about simply the daily routine about getting up in the morning, eating, laundry, practice, marching here and there, especially in Hawaii?
My memory is a comradeship we formed when we were there. We were like brothers all together. We've stayed together for 60-some years. This, to me, means more to me than all this that we've had. Yeah,
man. Was your day in Hawaii sort of like the one in Chapel Hill? Was that, I mean, you
completely different.
Completely different.
Completely different in ways. But we still, before we got up, we played Raising the Flag every morning. And, course, we didn't have to play for marching meal or marching class, but we raised the flag every morning, and then we rehearsed. And usually, just about every evening, some group or another had to need a bass to go perform some duty, whether the dance band, the full band, the show band, or combo. Somebody was leaving the bass to go and play for some other place. So that's basically the
routine. Chapel Hill was a regular routine. You knew exactly what you're going to do from day to day. And in Hawaiian Islands, you never knew.
How long did it take to get the instruments and get things going to where you did have some semblance of a routine in Hawaii?
Well, I know in Chapel Hill, most of them got the instruments. And they couldn't find a piccolo for a year. So that meant I had to play with everything. I played clarinet. I played along the French horn section. I played cymbal, and sometimes I played the tuba. So I was a utility man until the piccolo come.
Well, were those instruments supposed to have been sent to Hawaii?
No. That's just Chapel Hill.
Right, but I mean, then you got to Hawaii and had no instruments there.
But so what? They finally sent another new set
of instruments.
We had to leave instruments in Chapel Hill. That Hawaii, there were no instruments. So we had to wait for the instruments to arrive. I don't know how long. How long we did wait? I don't know how long, but I know we had to wait.
And that's a period where I've heard from some fellows how there was some disbelief that you were, in fact, musicians again. That's what I was saying earlier, how it seemed like a pattern from Norfolk, that once again this is sounds similar to what was going on.
And now the thing that bothers me is that how can the Navy move a unit all the way across the United States, across the ocean, to Hawaii, And when we were being moved by train, Durham, North Carolina, to California, every time we need a meal, three times a day, that train stopped at a station and the meal was ready for us. We had no cook on the train or anything. It stopped at the station and we ate and got back on the train. And that took about 5 or 6 days. How can the Navy do this and not having a record of ever doing that?
Well, they knew. Somebody knew. But they didn't keep the record. But they had to know that we moved.
Well, you know, I just
you got instruments.
I don't think you can do it without having a record.
They kept the record.
Somebody shredded the record.
So, I don't know what happened to the record.
Well, the official Navy record, yeah, like Mr. Floyd's book, it says it claims this distinction goes to our Great Lakes. Yeah. That's what their official history of U.S. Navy history. We're needing to take a break here, get y'all some food and get a schedule set up for the afternoon. So any other last comments real quick? We'll get you back in a little bit. Good, thank you.
I just want to talk. I've got some things I like to
We're going to get a chance to do some show and tell here in a second.